Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that song can only mean one thing. Sparty Talk is back. We are exhausting our thaw, the long, hard thaw. I am Satchmo, joined by the one, the only DB. How are we doing?
I feel like we've just been taken out of the freezer and defrosted.
All right. For those of you that have forgotten, this is your podcast where all things Michigan State sports. Oh, it's been a long, hard winter, or a long, hard freeze.
Should we remind people that we were boycotting the sports a couple of years ago during the pandemic?
Yeah, we were boycotting the sport during the pandemic. We were boycotting the sport during, what was an ill-timed return. We were boycotting for a variety of reasons. But you want to know what brought us back? Scott Frost being fired and for us to make all sorts of jokes about it.
It got us inspired.
100% inspired. So, all right. So we will get to the Scott Frost jokes a little later in the show.
Yes.
There's so many. Oh, my goodness. But let us begin, DB, with the biggest story since we left off, two and a half years ago, which is the ascendance of Michigan State football. Tuck coming, DB.
Yes.
How are we feeling about the Michigan State football program?
Well, it feels like it's in a much different and much better place than it was when we last spoke in 2020. A lot has happened since then.
Yes. Wow. A lot has happened. Mel Tucker has dipped into the transfer portal and shown that he can rebuild the talent quickly. He's also recruiting at a high level. And we're not world beaters yet. And I say we, like I play on the football team, but Michigan State isn't world beaters yet. You know, there's still a lot of room for improvement. Still need to build a lot of depth of talent, still need to get more talent in. But there is, without a doubt, a noticeable difference in the product in the field, TV. These are bigger, faster, taller, stronger players that we've seen at Michigan State in a long time. And you can tell we've got playmakers on this football team that is now 2-0 after beating both Western Michigan, which yay, that was a good win, and beating Akron. By the way, the number of zip jokes after shutting out Akron was at an all-time high.
Indeed, they would be.
So after blanking the zips and
after Akron scored zip against MSU.
Yeah, exactly. It's just unbelievable. A 52-0 score, DB.
The Spartans put Akron in a ziplock them back to Ohio.
The Spartan defense had the Akron offense in zip ties.
Hey-o.
Oh, my goodness. Well, so, which isn't entirely accurate, actually, considering they won 52-0, because at the beginning of the game, Akron was moving the ball at will. It's just a couple of big hits by Michigan State defenders jarred the ball loose. They recovered. Eventually, they knocked the Akron quarterback out of the game, and that was sort of all she wrote. On the offensive side of the ball this year, ODB, it's been the running backs have played reasonably well. The offensive line has played decent. The wide receivers have played reasonably well. The quarterback is the issue, DB. Peyton Thorne has not looked sharp at all.
No, he hasn't. I agree. Even in the lopsided win There's still a tremendous room for improvement there for Thorne.
Yeah, almost every pass he seems to be throwing is sailing high. He's missed connecting on some deep balls that have been wide open. And I just feel like if you get a little sharper quarterback play, now you're dealing with an offense that's just hard to deal with because you're mixing in an effective running game with a high-octane passing game. And Michigan State can put some points on the board, and they've been putting some points on the board despite the fact that the offense has struggled at times just in terms of being sharp and effective. They've been putting points on the board. Could you imagine what's happening when the quarterback is clicking with the wide receivers? You get that going with the running game. All of a sudden, this is an offense that's scary good. The quarterback just needs to get there.
Yeah, no, I agree. That amazingly is the one piece here that hopefully can right itself, because the Spartans have found two replacements, or at least a combo replacements, and I say replacements very loosely, for Kenneth Walker III. The running game has been solid, even with him gone.
Yeah, actually, Berger and Broussard have been really good, and so you've got to be happy with that. And then with Thorne, it's just, I mean, the funny thing is we've come out of the first two games feeling pretty good about our backup quarterback situation. Noah Kim's coming and done a good job, and now we just need to get feeling good about our quarterback situation. The other thing that's happened in the first couple games, TV, is injuries. My goodness, which injury gods have the Spartans angered, and what ritual sacrifice do we need to do to cleanse the Spartan football team of this injury bug?
Between Snow and
Henderson and Slade are just the latest of what feels like a string of high-profile injuries to Michigan State players, DB. And, look, I know we watch Michigan State and we care about Michigan State, so we know all about it. But when you watch other football programs, you see injuries, but I feel like you don't see them at the rate or at the level that you do in East Lansing. And Michigan State doesn't have the depth that other schools do to contend with it. So this is a bit of a mess, but it's frustrating. No, it's sad for the players. It's frustrating for fans. I just wish there was an explanation for what we saw.
Yeah, some of it's freaky because I think in the case of, if I'm not mistaken, Henderson was his leg was taken out by another teammate by mistake, if I'm not mistaken on that one.
Yeah, well, you know, we had an ESPN broadcast that didn't note that Henderson even went out of the game, so how are we supposed to know? We have an ESPN broadcast that focused on Darius Snow limping off the field, yet the announcers said nothing until after halftime. They're like, well, let's get a sideline report on a couple of injured Spartans, which, once again, didn't mention Xavier Henderson. There's no way of saying this other than ESPN's checked out of college football. Outside of the SEC, they do not care. Their production is not top rate. And they're like, we'll play out the string. It was pretty powerful.
Yeah. I can tell you, Satchmo, you are 100% right on. In fact, there's an incredible difference when you watch Fox's coverage or CBS's coverage of college football. The replays are sharper. The announcers know what's going on. The sideline people are right on top of stuff. You get, like, cameras in people's eyeballs. And ESPN is checked out. You're right.
And look, you and I have been doing this for a long time. You've been an announcer at games. I've called you. Look, we've been doing this a long time. All right? We've covered our share of sporting events. We know how this works. We've been in a lot of different press boxes for a lot of different sports, both professional and college. It's really simple. When a player lifts off the field, you identify the player, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say, so-and-so limping off the field. It is not complicated. You want to know what?
Nope.
Announcers have spotters working in the booth with them. Their job is to point to the number and give the guy announcer the name, and the announcer just says, so-and-so is limping off the field. We will keep you updated on his injury status. That's all. It's really simple. And it's not like Darius Snow or Xavier Henderson are insignificant players for Michigan State. They're two of the most important players on the team. Xavier Henderson's the captain. And the fact that the announcers, that nobody noticed that this was going on,
yep,
is just, it's
yep,
just, it's just astonishing.
Inexcusable.
Yep. And look, I watched, I'll give the Big Ten Network credit. I watched somebody, I don't even know who the play-by-play announcer was, call the game with Matt Millen against Akron. And by the way, at one point, Matt Millen called Akron the bad team and Michigan State the good team, which was absolutely hilarious. He's like, when you schedule things in games like this, the bad team usually wears down and the good team's talent usually wins out in the end.
Matt Millen getting flooded with Akron hate mail this week.
But to their credit, they knew who the important players were.
Yeah.
And they identified what was going on the field.
Yeah.
And they took care of the basics of the game, whereas with ESPN, you were just guessing. It's like, I don't know, looks about right.
Well, in the first week's game against Western Michigan, I don't remember who the main announcer was, but Andre Ware, I thought, was the color guy. I thought Andre Ware was better than that. I could be wrong, but...
Yeah, I thought Andre Ware was decent.
Yeah, but somebody needs to be paying attention to that stuff.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, I thought Andre Ware was decent. Not great, but decent. But the play-by-play, the production quality, all of it was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, even the replays, like when I was watching Alabama versus Texas this past weekend, they were showing all the important hits and replays, the things that you didn't see in the first, you know, the live moments, but they were going back and showing, they had cameras everywhere, showing you all the angles and the hits and sort of like questioning, just visually questioning, should that have been a penalty? What was that? You know, what was that play? What was that route? It was really good. And you're not getting that anymore from ESPN. Just phoning it in. Nah.
Yeah. They're mailing it in.
Yep.
Yeah. They're mailing it in. It is disappointing. The lack of attention to detail, the lack of just caring, the lack of production quality, it was painfully obvious. It's a shame. By the way, while we're on announcer bashing, Urban Meyer back with the Fox pregame show, like, come on, really? Urban Meyer? Haven't we learned enough about Urban Meyer that we never want to see him again?
There seems to be an incredible lack of credibility there with Urban Meyer.
It's just like, go harass someone else. Leave us alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or take the Nebraska job. Just get out of our way.
Well, now that you say that, Satchmo, do we want to pivot, or do we want to talk about this?
No, let's hold on. Let's wrap up the Michigan State football talk.
Okay.
And then we can pivot to Urban Meyer at Nebraska, Scott Frost jokes, and really have some fun. All right, we got these injuries on defense, which are significant and serious and are really going to test the Michigan State depth. We have the fact of the matter that, DB, that the Michigan State defense hasn't looked good. They forced some turnovers that have made them look a lot better than what they played. They've given up chunk yards, in both the ground game and the passing game. They've allowed teams to drive deep. Western Michigan and Akron both drove deep into Michigan State territory multiple times, but the Michigan State defense held firm. and manage to escape. The offenses look less than sharp, so there's a lot of room and a lot of cleaning up Michigan State has to do. And if they do that, they have a chance of being pretty good. But will they do that? Are they going to do that? Do we believe they're going to do that?
Right. Yeah, and it's, there's a very thin line here, because you mentioned the one key word there is depth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, depth is a serious issue because Mel Tucker is still adding talent to this team. Look, there's a reason why Mel Tucker is dipping into the transfer portal. And it's not because he wants to win the transfer portal every year. It's because this Michigan State football team needs more talent than it has. And one way to add more talent than it has is through the transfer portal and identifying top-notch talent that didn't succeed elsewhere but could succeed given the parameters of what Michigan State does. And I feel like Tucker is running almost an NFL-esque scouting program here where they sit down, they break down the tape, and they're like, yep, guy's got all the measurables. He's got the height, speed, explosiveness, fast twitch ability, quick twitch ability that we're looking for. He's got the football IQ that we're looking for, and his skill set fits into what we're trying to do as a football team. And when they identify those players, they go out and they get them and they bring them in because they know those players are hard to find, and you'd rather take a year or 2 years of college football tape than – you know, no years of then trying to rely on a freshman to try and do it. And then you bring the freshman along more slowly and give them a chance to acclimate and grow and do that sort of stuff. It's a strategy that makes sense. Mel Tucker's figured it out. But part of the reason we need to do it is because the talent level dictates that this is what we have to do.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think Mel Tucker is the jolt of energy that the Spartan football program needed after Mark D'Antonio. And I think where we last talked about Spartan football, you know, 2.5 years ago, was just when Mel Tucker got hired. And he went through that first season as a brand new coach without being able to have any real good practices with his own team to see what he had.
Yeah, and one of the things about Mel Tucker is he's a culture guy, right? He has a certain way of doing things, a certain way of practicing. He has standards that he wants to implement and uphold people. One of my favorite Mel Tucker stories that I've heard recently actually was about Darius Snow. And apparently in practice, they used to award extra points, like bonus points, because they would score practice. And they used to award bonus points for extra effort, like just really effort above and beyond the call of duty. And Darius Snow was getting all the bonus points every time, every practice. He's the one that hoovered up the bonus points. And then at a certain point, Mel Tucker's like, why am I giving extra points for maximum effort and effort above and beyond? Everyone should be providing maximum effort above and beyond every play. That's the standard. So he stopped awarding the extra point and said, well, you just got to play like that every play. And I like that. You know, I like that accountability. I like the expectations. I like the tempo and the pace at which they play. I like the perfectionism that they shoot for. And I like the positivity with which they do it. It's all in, I mean, it's interesting. We haven't seen this sort of energy and belief and confidence and just swag around the system in a long time. I mean, D'Antonio had some of that, but not the way Tucker did. I mean, no. I would argue that we haven't seen this since Perlis, DB.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right about that. Yep. I think there was some good culture stuff with D'Antonio in the first, you know, 5 to 7 years, but then it kind of slipped a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes that happens with programs. It's very hard to recruit and coach college football and be successful. And like it or not, like them or not, and Spartan fans always still, you know, have a little thing in the back of their neck about Nick Saban. But Nick Saban has done a tremendous job at Alabama, just continuing to be consistent all the time. They're always there, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's hard.
It does
it's not
help
easy.
That they have exactly, and I know this because I counted DP, they have exactly 1.256 million assistant coaches.
Yes, it's like the McDonald's sign with the number served.
Yeah. In fact, rumor has it that Nick Saban's already reached out to Scott Frost to become an analyst for the team.
Oh, my goodness. Before we defrost, do we want to make any bold observations on the Spartans' trip west to Husky Stadium this Saturday night?
I want to make zero bold predictions on that one because that game scares me.
Yeah, it does. It is scary. Yes. I don't see – I'm pretty worried about this game. I don't see anything good coming of it. Washington's offense looks explosive. Their defense actually looks pretty good. And that's a – Satchmo, that is a very, very tough stadium to play in. It is just – the place is small. And it shakes, and it's just—it's like Iowa City, you know. It's like you just bad things happen there to anybody.
Yeah. The only thing I'm happy about, DB, is you and I did not pay to go out to see this game.
We've learned our lesson.
Well, we'll pay to go out to see future games, I'm not wholly convinced that the Michigan State offense or defense is operating at a high enough level to win this game on the road.
Right.
I could be wrong.
Yep.
I hope I'm wrong.
When I looked at the schedule way before we knew what we had, you know, in these first two games, I looked at it with concern on two games in particular, and one of them was this one and, of course, Ohio State. So
I almost feel better about the Ohio State game than I do the Washington game. And the reason why is I kind of feel like the Ohio State defense can be had. And I kind of feel like Mel Tucker has a good idea of how to stop the Ohio State offense. Whether Michigan State can do it or not is a completely different matter.
Yeah.
And I also feel like, and I'm hoping that by the time Michigan State plays Ohio State, Thorne will be sharp, he'll be on target, and that offense can score and keep up with Ohio State. And so I just feel like this Washington game is too early. And so that's the thing. I would have liked, you know, one more game against a team not in the Sun Belt to warm up here.
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as Ohio State goes, the two things that do play in the Spartans' favor with this year's Ohio State game is one is that it's at home, so you always have a better chance at home. And then it's earlier in the season where Ohio State may not be fully operating on all the cylinders. In the past, the Spartans have been stuck playing Ohio State near the Michigan game. And that's not the best place to play Ohio State.
Yeah, I agree with that. And hopefully, given the depth issues Michigan State has, Michigan State will be a fresher team when they play Ohio State this year compared to previous years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we shall see.
We shall see. I think the last thing I want to say before we wrap up the football talk is the Spartans, I feel, are better this year than they were last year. I feel like they have more talent. They have more depth. They're more balanced. Do they need a lot of work? Yes. But I still feel like they're better this year than last year. Now, their overall record might not reflect the fact that they've improved,
mm-hmm.
Which is okay because last year was amazing. They won all of these close games. They got all these home run plays. They did all of these things that are just hard to replicate. But I feel like what you're seeing this year is a foundation for success that is being built and that a sturdy program is being erected on top of that. And I feel like the trajectory is headed in the right direction. I'm excited about that. So I'm not really going to worry about the record this year, but I just want to see, you know, that improvement. Are we improving week to week? Are we getting better week to week? Are we showing? Because I feel like the talent is improving. I feel like we're showing more speed, more power. We still have some issues on both sides of the ball that need to be fixed, but that'll happen over time. But I just feel like you can see the trend of something not just positive being built, but something powerful being built, and that excites me.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I see that too, and that's a great place to leave Spartan football right now.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to the more amusing part of the show, which is Scott Frost jokes. and so Nebraska hired Scott Frost, and the assumption was that, you know, they were going to fire Frost after the Indiana game when his buyout got cut by a lot of money. Instead, he paid the full buyout and fired him now.
Oh, my God.
He's lost almost every one-score game. He's a gazillion games under 500. He has been an abject disaster at Nebraska, which is interesting, DB, because when he was hired by Nebraska – there was general consensus that he was the home run hire. He came off of two great years at University of Central Florida, had what was close to, had a national championship caliber team in his second year there, or maybe both years there. I mean, they were really good with a lot of NFL talent, and he did an outstanding job there, and so you don't want to take anything away from him. And he went to Nebraska, and he fell flat on his face. Throw in whatever corn mush analogy you want to, that's what he fell into. And so the question, BB, is what happened here?
Well, we have said this many times before in our Nebraska discussion on the Nebraska segment on this podcast, which we have occasionally, and a Rutgers segment we also occasionally have. But the Nebraska segment of our past podcast, you will hear us both talking about, Nebraska is not what they once were.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think part of it is, look, Nebraska's recruiting advantages used to be they were on TV and no one else wasn't. And you want to know what? Everyone's on TV now. And so that's part of it. Part of it is, you know, the talent level in football in Nebraska in high school football has dropped in comparison to the rest of the country. So you just couldn't recruit a bunch of people from within your normal recruiting zone. It's tougher for Nebraska to recruit nationally than it used to be, and it's tougher for them to get players to go to Nebraska than it used to be. But you want to know who's figured it out? Luke Fickell in Cincinnati's figured it out.
Yep.
Stoops in Kentucky has figured it out.
Yeah.
He's like, there's this state north of Kentucky called Ohio, and they have lots of football talent.
Well, Mel Tucker's figured it out. And so that goes to your point, Satchmo, abject disaster. I mean, he was, to me, I think, just in over his head.
Yeah.
Not ready
I mean,
for that kind of a situation.
I think that has to be the ultimate explanation, right, is he was in over his head. I mean, and he was in over his head enough, TB, that I've got breaking news here. BB, this just in. The Walmarts in Lincoln, Nebraska have banned Frosted Flakes.
Oh, it's so sad. It's a sad day. All those kids in Lincoln are just going to be devastated.
Those sugary sweet cereals that they know and love, no more.
Or is it possible that they banned the use of the word frost in Lincoln, Nebraska?
Oh, that. Wait a minute. We have to go to the Scott Frost desk with this breaking news. DB has. DB, I understand
sad
you
news.
Are breaking news about Wendy's and Scott Frost.
Yeah, sad news tonight, Satchmo. The promotion that was ongoing in Lincoln, Nebraska for free Frosties for every Nebraska win has been canceled by the Wendy's restaurant chain in Lincoln. It's very devastating, Satchmo. Well, if we could get some man on the street sound bites later, we'll try to pass them along, Satchmo. But there's devastation that Frosties are gone from Lincoln, Satchmo.
Oh, my heart breaks for the people of Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah.
I mean, Frosties are really the only reason to go to Wendy's.
Scott Frost, Satchmo, not only was fired, but he has sucked the soul out of Lincoln, Nebraska on his way out there.
Yeah, he has. I mean,
yeah.
He has. I mean, they were so high on him, and now that he's gone, they don't know what to do next. They're like, what do you want us to do? I mean, Nebraska, I don't think people understand this. The state of Nebraska cares more about the Huskers than any SEC fan base cares about their football team. It's not even close. I mean, the fans of Nebraska care more about football than the fans of any other fan base in the United States, bar none. And this fan base that loves football, loves college football, loves their Huskers so much, they can't even eat peach cobbler anymore after losing to Georgia Southern.
They've eliminated the peach cobblers from the various diners and restaurants in Lincoln as well.
Oh, peach cobbler, peach pie, pecan pie, all stricken from the menu. Thanks to Scott Frost.
The use of the word Georgia is no longer allowed in the textbooks, and that state will be eliminated from all maps in geography class.
Well, and that's the funny thing, right? In Nebraska, they're like, well, Georgia Southern, isn't Georgia South? They don't know what's going on. They have no idea what school beat them.
Oh, Satchmo, this just in. Can you play the music again? I've got some news.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
This just in from the Weather Center. The frost advisory has been lifted in Lincoln.
Oh, my goodness.
The corn is okay.
There is one thing Scott Frost did not do during his tenure at Lincoln, and here it is.
What? Yes.
Scott Frost never did blame it on the rain.
No, he never complained about the weather. And as far as we know from local officials in Lincoln, he never lip-synced at any karaoke clubs in Lincoln either. Oh, Scott Frost, we're having a lot of fun with Scott Frost. I hope he's listening tonight. Scott, if you're out there, call in. Let us know how you're doing. Yeah.
We want to know if you're okay, Scott, because, look, we kid because we love. But you seem like a perfectly nice human being.
He seems like a nice guy.
You seem like a nice guy. We'd be happy to chat. Right. We'd be happy to talk through your issues. we are. And we also sympathize because we know it is hard to transform from regional recruiting into national recruiting. But, or even worse, it's hard, even harder to go from a national recruiting, get knocked off the pedestal and climb back up, which is what, you know, Nebraska is trying to do. Look at it this way. There's like entire generations of people that know Nebraska as a mediocre to losing football program.
Yeah.
Right? The only people that remember Nebraska's heyday are people our age and older, TV.
Right.
And as a waitress in New Orleans once told me, you old.
Right. And the list of Nebraska coaches.
If you're 20 years old, living in Nebraska, you know, Michigan State
is
the best football program you've ever seen.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And the list of there's starting quite a list of Nebraska coaches that have been fired. We have people like Frank Solich.
We look fondly on the days of Frank Solich and Bo Pelini.
Bo Pelini,
the Wayne Fonts of Nebraska.
Yes. He was Mr. 10 wins. Or 9 wins. The favorite number was 9.
9-4, September 4th. September 4th, Bo Pelini did.
Mike Riley was there for a short time.
So.
And the legendary Bill Callahan.
I mean, the legends of the corn, DB.
Oh, my goodness. And look, here's the thing. Like, Nebraska fans are very nice. Like, they're not mean-spirited people. They're very welcoming when you go to their stadium.
They're probably the nicest fans I've ever met. A close second, by the way, is Georgia. Georgia fans are really nice, too.
Okay. All right.
But Nebraska fans, really nice. I like Nebraska fans. They're welcoming. They treat you with respect, class, dignity. All the stuff that Bernie Streeter used to talk about at Arby's. And
Satchmo with the product plug of the night. We got the meat.
You know, and unlike Ken Beatrice, I do eat curly fries. But
hey-o.
You're right. Nebraska fans are really nice. And so on the one hand, I feel bad at having all this fun at their expense. But on the other hand, the Scott Frost jokes just sort of write themselves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, everyone, like you said, everyone thought that Scott Frost was the second coming of Jack Frost or something there, you know. Magically going to make
instead, he left the program in a state of permafrost.
The Nebraska Cornhuskers are a victim of climate change.
Climate change wasn't real in Nebraska until Frost showed up.
Oh, somewhere Rutgers is smiling tonight.
For the first time since Rutgers joined the Big Ten, they're not the butt of coaching jokes right now.
Oh my goodness gracious, Satchmo! Not to be squishing the dreams of Nebraska anytime soon or Rutgers, but I can't wait for those USC Rutgers Big Ten matchups coming up in a couple of years.
Oh, that classic rivalry dating back centuries.
Oh, I just love it.
We'll get
Notre
the big expansion in a second, but I don't care who the new coach of Nebraska is going to be. Well, let's just put it
no,
up.
No, we really don't.
We really don't. We did this segment. We did this segment because we can make fun of, we can make lots of Scott Frost jokes, and so we did. And mission accomplished. Nebraska fans, we wish you luck. You're nice people. You deserve better.
You're nice people. We hope for. We'll be rooting hard for you to beat the University of Michigan in November. Hopefully, you can shock them.
Every year, we're going to root for you to beat Michigan. Every year, we're going to root for you to beat Wisconsin. And every year, we're going to root for you to beat Iowa. Why? Because all three programs deserve it. So we like you. The Scott Frost jokes could sort of write themselves.
Yes.
So, all right. We've had enough fun at Scott Frost Express. Maybe not. Maybe we'll return to it later in the show. Who knows?
May come up once in a while. I will. We will track. We will keep you updated on the future of Scott Frost as in future weeks.
Yeah, yeah, you know, who knows how it'll work is way into future conversations. Oh, I know. One place where there's very little frost is in Southern California.
Oh. You don't see a lot of frost warnings out in California anymore. Yeah.
Which is where the Big Ten is expanding to. They're expanding into the University of Southern California, UCLA, both joining the Big. Which means that Michigan State is going to be playing UCLA and USC in the near future. It also means Rutgers and Maryland are going to be playing USC and UCLA in the near future.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yes. USC, they're probably circling that trip to East Brunswick, New Jersey on their calendar as we speak.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, all right, I will say this from experience. I will offer this up. The national chain restaurants in Piscataway are lit on game day, and it's because nobody goes to the games.
That's very good. So if you want a good bite to eat in a nice, warm, quiet atmosphere, go to a Rutgers game. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. The hot chocolate is good. It's not Michigan State-level hot chocolate because Michigan State is the good stuff. But, you know, it at least it's passable in Rutgers.
Did it have marshmallows in it?
No, but I give you, like if I, look, TV, you and I have both taken our family, our moms, our parents, family to games in East Lansing. And the way I had to talk my mom into going to games at East Lansing was, A, one, promise it wouldn't get too cold, and B, that I'd get her hot chocolate because she loved the hot chocolate at Spartan Stadium.
Yeah, it's good. It is good.
It's good.
Yeah.
And... Yep. So it worked. It was really good, but the hot chocolate at Rutgers isn't that good, but it's serviceable. I didn't spit it out after tasting it.
You know, I have a hot chocolate memory that I never forget, and that's when you and I visited the Horseshoe in Columbus, and the Spartan defense annihilated Luke Fickell's one season at Ohio State offense 10-7. And we were the last people in the Horseshoe sipping our hot cocoa in the upper level with our feet up, enjoying the sight of the scoreboard saying MSU 10, OSU 7.
It, as far as hot chocolate memories go, DB, it doesn't get much better than that. That was a beautiful sight.
It was. It was. We were the last people out of there. The security people had to tell us to leave.
Not only did the security people have to tell us to leave, but the waitress that served us pizza before we left, were like, you guys better eat this pizza before all the fans get here, because we can't promise anything after that.
I remember that.
No, we cannot guarantee your safety.
It was nice to be warned.
It was.
Yeah.
And we took the warning seriously. We finished in, you know.
Yep. We swiftly
and made our way home.
We exited swiftly back to the Hilton Garden Inn in
yeah.
Columbus. Yes. And went incognito.
It was a good trip. We've got to do that again.
I know, yeah, that was fun. That was, you know, it's nice when you never know what's going to happen when you go to any game. But on the road, you know, you really don't know what you're getting. And that was a surprising, nice day.
It was a great day. That was fun too, because at a certain point, like every hit in the stadium, the Ohio State fans like ooh, and they just started to feel the pain of their quarterback. And meanwhile, you and I are just celebrating the beatdown.
Yeah, I mean, that quarterback had nightmares of Michigan State defensive linemen in his face, basically.
Those were
yep.
the days. All right,
yeah.
But how do we feel about USC and UCLA joining the Big?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I've kind of thrown out all the old, you know, I mean, we lost the Big Ten a long time ago in terms of the numbers. People that don't know that much about football sort of snicker and laugh at the name of the conference because they're like, aren't you guys like 17 teams or whatever? And I'm like, I've lost count. But everybody's becoming like a big super conference anyways, right?
Yeah, look, it's about TV money.
Yeah.
And this gets the Big Ten more TV money, and therefore they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And here's where I stand, which is the idea, the premise that college sports on any level was an amateur endeavor has left the building. And I am frankly quite okay with it, right? Because all these schools are getting billion-dollar contracts, and then they're clutching their bow ties when, the kids don't have enough time to study. I was like, well, what do you expect? You just took a billion-dollar contract. You agreed to let them play games at whatever time TV dictated. You did not have to do any of this stuff. You chose to do this. You made this. And then you don't want to give the kids the money. And then you want to clutch your bow ties and clutch your pearls and say, oh, but they're not, they don't have enough time to study. Come on.
Yeah, that's the real crime, though, that the kids, that they don't get any of this money.
Yeah. I mean now
it's
they're starting to.
Crime.
Name and likeness and all of that sort of stuff.
Yes, certainly. But they don't all get that. I mean, you know.
They don't all get that. You want to know why? It really has to get to the point where we're paying the kids. Give them.
Yeah.
Give them the money. They've earned it.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. Yep. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma are waltzing over into the SEC. I mean,
BB. Texas and Oklahoma are not waltzing. They're two-stepping over to the SEC.
I'm sorry. I misspoke. Yes. Yes. They're two-stepping over into the SEC.
Or they're line dancing into the SEC.
Yes. But they are departing what's going to be left of the Big 12 when the Big 12 welcomes the likes of Memphis and Houston and somebody else.
Oh, yeah. The funny thing is the Big 12 might be the best conference after all of it because they're going to have a bunch of competitive football teams, really exciting
yes.
teams, who are occasionally going to compete for the national championship. And the SEC is going to be left with Alabama winning every year, and the Big Ten is going to be left with Ohio State winning every year. And we're going to be looking at the Big 12 going, I kind of wish we had that.
And the Pac-12 will just sort of slide off the planet into the ocean.
Yeah. Wow. Another victim of climate change, much like Scott Frost.
And you know who could be excellent candidates? This is a professional segue. You know who could be excellent candidates for the new Big 12 are the Marshall Thundering Herd and the Appalachian State Mountaineers.
Oh, professional segue, BB.
Yeah.
Professional. So Marshall, by the way, beat Notre Dame, for those that don't remember, what happened this weekend, because they're still drinking over the Lions game. And so Notre Dame is off to an 0-2 start this year, which is really funny considering pollsters pick Notre Dame to finish in the top 10. Every year, DB, pollsters pick Notre Dame, and every year Notre Dame doesn't do it. You would think pollsters would learn their lessons, yet Notre Dame. And the funny thing is, and I ask this in all seriousness, why does everyone want Notre Dame to join their program, their conference?
At this point, the Big Ten doesn't need them.
The SEC doesn't need them.
No. I mean, they're competing with the five games a year with the SEC or the ACC. I mean, what is that?
When's the last time Notre Dame's been legitimately good? Like, every time they got to the CFP, they got blown out. Everyone knew they were going to get blown out.
Right.
The college football playoffs. Yeah. The first half was close, and realistically, Connor Cook hadn't hurt his shoulder that year. Michigan State might have won.
Yeah. I mean, Notre Dame had a couple of sniffs into the playoff, and I think they had one championship appearance, but yeah, they were all complete disasters from the first snap. I mean, Alabama blew them out probably once or twice, and they're sort of like Nebraska in a way. I mean, it was the late 80s. It was Lou Holtz when they were a well thought of program, a threatening program.
Yes, Lou Holtz, who's now complaining about Brian Kelly never returning the letters he wrote him. I wouldn't return letters to Lou Holtz either.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Dr. Lou is now airing his grievances, I guess, everywhere.
Wow, yes. He has a tendency to do that these days. So Marshall and then Appalachian State, DB, taking down Texas A&M.
I would have loved to have just been standing there near Jimbo Fisher at the end of that. I wanted more camera shots of Jimbo when the ship was sinking.
Yeah, what I wanted was some reporter to ask Jimbo Fisher how much more name and likeness that Texas A&M needed to beat Appalachian State.
Oh, that would have been a lawsuit. Jimbo Fisher would have just lost it. I mean,
another good question for Jimbo Fisher was, how many recruiting classes do you think you need before you catch up with Appalachian State?
Coach, any comment on the Alabama game coming up October 8th?
how about this one? Coach, I know you're a student of college football history. You're well learned in college football history. Which upset do you think was worse, Appalachian State over Michigan or Appalachian State Texas A&M?
The funny thing is, if you would have answered and said the Michigan game,
he'd probably be right.
Well, that was really That was the first one, and unforgettable to many of us.
And, well, it was also, look, Appalachian State is Division One now. Went back when they played Michigan, they were.
Yes,
they were down
Yes, right, right. Where was Michigan ranked on that day? Weren't they, like,
top 10?
They weren't number one, were they?
No,
they were in the top
10, maybe top 5, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they were pretty up. They were up there. Yep.
And that's
yeah.
the game that made Big Ten Network, by the way, right? That game was on the Big Ten Network. It wasn't anywhere else.
Right.
And all
right.
of a sudden, people were clicking their channel going, wait a minute, how come I can't watch this game?
Right.
So, thank you, Appalachian State.
Appalachian State gave birth to the Big Ten Network.
Well, not only did they give birth to the Big Ten Network, they helped make the Big Ten Network a success. That success
yeah.
of the Big Ten Network it led to more money than any other conference, and that success
yeah.
led to the billion-dollar TV rights deal that we're talking about today. You could all trace it back to Appalachian State. Appalachian State, thank you, and congratulations on beating Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher.
Taking down the Muddy Aggies, which, you know, we have to give Appalachian State credit. They came to play, and they have consistently good, solid football teams that nobody wants to schedule.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to schedule mm-hmm. Appalachian State. I mean, who?
Nope.
I mean, has Appalachian State been to Michigan, been to the state of Michigan since that game?
No. Nope. If Mel Tucker saw them on a future schedule, he was probably very quick to remove it. He probably just took it off without – he just took some white out over it and then had the schedules reprinted and said, I don't know anything about that. I don't know anything about an Appalachian State game in 2028. Never saw it.
So if you're the Appalachian State AD – you just call up the University of Michigan AD every year just for giggles to say, hey, do you want to play again this year?
Just to get the reaction? And put them on speakerphone and everybody's real quiet. And then all of a sudden in the background after Ward Manuel hangs up, everybody's like, wah!
Another development this year, besides the greatness of Marshall and Appalachian State, but another development here, which, you know, I'm pretty pleased to see, at least I think I'm pretty pleased to see, is the soon-to-be-expanded college football playoff
season.
Yeah, go to 12 teams. What do you think about this?
I love it. I think we've all been waiting for this to happen. We've all been calling for this for a long time. And, you know, bring it on. I think it's about time.
It is. It is because it just makes the college football season that much more interesting.
Yes.
Rather than, you know, two teams or four teams or maybe six teams, you know, with a shot at making it every year. And, you know, the cast of character changes, but the number is around six every year. And everyone else sort of feeling, now you're talking about, look, this is almost half of the top 25 with a shot at making the playoffs. That,
right.
that raises the stakes for every game this year. It means you can go in as a one-loss team or maybe even a two-loss team. And it means that improving throughout the year becomes important. And it means that playing every game tough becomes important. And it means that, you know, you're not just going to start, you know, playing kids that, you know, you're like, well, we've lost a couple games. Let's start building for next year. No, you still got a shot at this. And so, to me, this makes life more interesting. But it only makes life more interesting if the pollsters are paying attention, right? If this is about brand name Scrabble, then who cares?
Yeah.
But if the pollsters are actually paying attention and are following college football, then to me this becomes really interesting.
Yeah. No, and also, too, I just wondered, to go along with this and these conference expansions, are we going to see fewer non-conference games?
I think you almost have to. What is the point of expanding the conferences if you're not going to play more conference games?
Right. Right. I mean, even St. Nick Saban said his favorite season a couple of years ago, probably because he could hear in the opposing stadiums, was the COVID year when there was cardboard cutouts, because all they did was play conference games, and they really liked that. And you have USC, you have UCLA, you have all these teams. Granted, not all the matchups are great, but why are these teams in there if we're just going to see them across the aisle on the other side of the standings?
Yeah. There's also a lot less rat poison out there when you have cardboard cutouts for fans in the stadium.
Satchmo moving towards an Oakland Coliseum joke.
Oh, yeah, well. Saban likes to talk about rat poison. I like the Oakland Coliseum. It's a good mix.
With their feral cat problem there. The other side of the bay.
Yeah, it is a serious problem there. Jeez. But on the other hand, their vegan hot dogs are really good. So,
as long as sewage doesn't fall out of the pipes on the hot dog stand, you're good.
Well, okay. So let's be real. You and I have been to games at various Washington football stadiums, and we've been to games at the Oakland Coliseum. The Oakland Coliseum, for all of its flaws, are significantly better than any stadium that the Washington football team's ever played in.
Last year, I believe, a section of stands of Eagles fans broke off when they were celebrating in FedEx Field. And then sewage started leaking on the suite holders at one point during last season.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, you figure the suite holders are used to swimming in sewage, but
yeah, when you do business with Danny Boy, you know, I guess that's what you get, right?
Yeah, exactly. When you do business with Danny Boy, that's exactly what you get. That's par for the course. Oh my goodness. All right.
We're letting everybody have it tonight. I think we've clocked Scott Frost, Iowa, Wisconsin, the usual suspects, and we've even took a few cheap shots at an NFL owner. I love it.
Well, there's no such thing as a cheap shot against Danny Boy. It's just reality.
Well, no. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so we like the college football playoff. It can't start soon enough, and I have a feeling that by the time it starts, Michigan State's going to be well in position to be contending for those spots on an annual basis.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there was actually a stat thrown out there that if they had this arrangement before, that the Spartans would have made the college football playoff like a half dozen times in the last 15 years.
Yeah, and they would have won that one year, the year before the Rose Bowl, baby. Or no, they would have won the year of the Rose Bowl. That Rose Bowl team was national championship worthy.
Yeah,
I think they would have won that year. I firmly believe that. That defense was lights out. It didn't matter who they played. They were up to the challenge.
Yep. Agreed.
All right. Any other pro sports? Any other sports news that we want to touch upon? Pro sports, college sports, you name it. Anything we want to talk about?
Well, Well, just two quick things. First of all, I was reading a blog, and it's actually not new, but it got me thinking, and you can just tell me your opinion on this, but the blog is, was on SB Nation by, I want to give proper credit here, Bill Connolly. Have you heard of him?
Is he the Philadelphia guy?
He might be. I'm not sure of his background, but he wrote a blog that I tend to agree with, and this was maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, so this is not new. But the reason that I came across this blog was my concern over some of these college games now going way over the 3 hour mark into 4 hour territory.
Holy
sometimes
cow.
5 hour territory. And it's unnecessary. And something's got to be done about it because these games drag on and on and on and on. And he had some ideas, and you know, the only thing that I could say that makes sense of what he's saying is he's actually calling for the elimination until the last 5 minutes of the game of the first down clock stop.
Actually, if you want to know what the first down clock stop doesn't bother me. You want to know what bothers me? Everything being replayed.
Yes. Well, that's the next thing. The replays do not have a time limit, even to this point in college football. And everything being replayed.
Go back to the challenges. Just two challenges a game.
Yes.
And put some strategy.
Yep.
Actually, never mind the two challenges a game. You go to NFL rules on challenges, which is every score automatically gets reviewed, every turnover automatically gets reviewed, and after that, you got two challenges a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. They
Simple.
Need to find ways to, I mean, for God's sake, baseball's games are starting to become shorter than college football games. Like, I love college football, but there's no reason for games to go on for 4 or 4.5 hours, even big games.
Yeah, so part of the reason I think it's happening, DB, is that college football referees, and I think this is part of it, right? They're
mm-hmm.
so reliant on replay. They're like, maybe it happened, maybe it did. Let me go upstairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they're hearing from conference officials when they know they got the play right, but some replay officials tell them, you better look at it just to make sure.
Yeah.
And you know, it's too much.
Yeah.
And
also,
it's got to get faster, quicker, and it's got to get better. And so I think that's a large part of it, right? Is if we're going to invest all this money into showing all these games on TV and into putting in replay systems and all of this sort of stuff, then let's put the time and the effort into making sure this is a quick process. And
yes.
You know, a quick process is not having a referee jog over and look at a tablet that's smaller than every big, I mean, look at a tablet that's like built into like a hood with a cover. I mean, what are they doing? It's just silly. It's like, remember with those ViewMax things we had growing up or whatever.
ViewMaster, yeah.
Yeah, ViewMaster. Yeah, I mean, why are referees looking at ViewMasters to make this sort of stuff?
They have to develop the film on the sideline to let them see it at the CVS photo mat.
Oh, my goodness. That's right. CVS photo mat.
And make copies down in the press center before the refs can see the – before they can see the photos of the Yes.
I mean, to be fair, I do want these calls to be right. And
yeah.
I do want them to be accurate because they do affect the outcomes of games. But you're right, DB. These games are going on forever. And every play going to replay just seems like the fastest way to clean this up.
Yeah. And also, too, this Bill Connolly does make an interesting point about maybe college football – going the soccer route a little bit with more in-game ads to cut down on the number of TV timeouts. especially
I'd be
mid-level games that don't mean anything, like, you know.
Like Appalachian State, Texas A&M?
Well,
Marshall, Notre
chances
Dame.
Are, chances are very high we will never in our lifetime see Appalachian State play Texas A&M or Michigan again. Unless it's in the college football playoff. Then you got another thing coming, in the words of Judas Priest.
That would be so great.
Yeah.
I'd be for in-game commercials.
I think anything to keep the clock going.
But the in-game commercials are fine. I mean, why not?
Yeah. Now the TV network people will probably say, well, look, everything's all, you know, dumbed down to highlights now, so people aren't staying tuned. But I don't know, like college games, I'm staying tuned to the game because I'm rooting for my school and I want to see. You know, it's like I can go in and out of an NFL game or anything else, but I'm staying with, you know,
I agree with you, DB. I think the engagement level for college games is a lot higher. The viewership might not be, but the engagement level is quite higher. And when you have an engagement level that high, they'll watch the commercial on the screen, on a split screen or logo or whatever. And they'll stay more engaged because, look, you're getting to the point where Alabama fans don't want to pay to see cupcakes. Just think about this for a second. Alabama fans don't want to pay to see watch Alabama play cupcakes. That's where we're at.
I don't blame them.
I don't blame them. I don't blame them either. So you've sort of milked that dry. And so if you're going to do that, all right, throw a bone back. But, yeah, we get it. You don't want to watch these games. So let's speed it up. Let's keep the commercials on screen, get the game going.
Yep.
And you'll probably win some fans back that way.
Yeah, and also, too, in the COVID season, the one thing that I learned was because not everybody was playing all the time, I actually got to see, like, Appalachian State play Coastal Carolina. And there are some really good teams in the different conferences that if they just showed them a little bit more, I actually would tune in and out of some of those games. I'm not going to sit there for the whole thing, but I find some of those matchups to be, they're going to be more entertaining than watching Alabama blow somebody out.
Agreed, and I do enjoy watching the Chanticleers play. And so agreed, 100%. And this is what you want ultimately, right? You want people who aren't fans of these schools to turn in and be engaged.
Yep, the product overall will be better if the matchups are, if you stick to sort of the conferences, and you know, I would rather see Michigan State be playing Iowa and, you know, Minnesota and whatever, even though they're not always great. I would rather see that than Michigan State playing Akron. I mean, you know, you can have one game, move along.
When the games are more meaningful, the drama gets amped up, the excitement gets amped up, the intensity gets amped up, everything just becomes better. It's like playoff hockey.
Yeah.
It's so intense. You're just willing to watch any game.
Right. Nothing like playoff hockey. That's another one that I stay engaged with for, you know, whole stretches of game because it's exciting. But at least those games, unless it's overtime, but overtime is fun in pro hockey. But, like, you know, at least those games don't go on and on and on. They kind of figured it out. So, anyway, that's my gripe for the night. Anything else from you?
That's a good gripe. Nope, I left it all on the frost glass paneling.
We left it all out there, and you know, we've defrosted, and you know, good luck, Scott Frost. You know, maybe think about changing your name. I don't know. I mean, you know, if it's too hard, you know, every time you pass a Wendy's or, just look in the refrigerator. The word frost isn't a lot of, you know, I mean.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
I mean.
It hurts.
It's tough. But, I mean, Scott, take some time off. I mean, you're getting paid not to do anything. So don't do anything.
Don't. And don't go in the supermarket near the corn or drive by a field, cornfield. He's probably going to start sobbing uncontrollably. So maybe take some of that money and go to Hawaii for a while. You know, get away from corn and Wendy's. And
you know, Hawaii is a good solution because they don't really play football out there. I mean, that. I mean, we saw that this past weekend.
By the way, okay, speaking of long games, all right. So I didn't realize there was a weather delay in that game. Surprised we didn't hear a lot of complaining about that. But
We would have if they lost.
Yes. But I didn't care, but I crossed my ESPN app late at night on Saturday at an hour where only maybe the West Coast games still would have been going on. And I looked at my phone, and we were well past midnight, and there was just starting the fourth quarter there. And it was like 49-3. And I'm like, what? And I knew there was a weather delay, but still, that's ridiculous. Was it anybody left watching that at 12:15 in the morning?
I think Hawaii was trying to get onto prime time in Hawaii.
Let's drag this out so people see us a little bit. They have somebody erase the score on the local ESPN affiliate there and make it look like they're winning, you know, 13-3 or whatever. Nobody would notice. There'd be a big celebration of the win over Michigan the next day. I mean, doesn't the internet take like 2 or 3 days to get out there?
Oh, at least. You got to swim across the ocean, right?
Yeah. It's got to go on the underwater line. So it'll take a couple of days till the reality sinks in that they didn't win. But still have some fun, you know, eating pineapple on the beach, reading Dante's Inferno for a couple of days.
No. Scott Frost never reads Dante Inferno. Too hot.
He's too hot. He's not banging the Italian woman up in apartment 8C in the maid's quarter. Scott Draper. Oh, man. Can we get sued on this podcast?
Oh, my goodness.
I don't have anything. If somebody tried.
He could take my money for the Frosty I was going to buy at Wendy's.
You can have my flat screen TV. I watch everything on my phone now anyway.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, it's a good place to leave things unless you have anything else.
Just too easy, baby. All right. Well, one of these days, Nebraska fans are going to say when they hire their new head coach, they're going to say this.
Rush Cole, be Coltrane always gets his man. Come on, just... No, I'm not kidding.
Hey, that could be their next coach.
It could be. All right. On that note, good luck to Michigan State out in Washington. We hope you win. We hope you prove DB and Satchmo wrong. We hope we're wrong. We hope the offense is sharp. We hope the defense continues to turn the ball over. And we hope Michigan State comes back to East Lansing with a 3-0 win. So that is our hope. We will see. We will be podcasting again because this was too much fun. We have to do it again soon. And we'll go from there. So until next time, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.